All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, week two edition of the show, as we got a 1-0 football team. The Bucks beat the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football 19-3. A phenomenal defensive effort, and the offense does enough to get it done. And we'll get all into that today, as well as look ahead to the Saints game. Bucks play at regular old 1 o'clock, which they don't do very often anymore, but they do this Sunday when they go to New Orleans. The Saints also 1-0 after a wild one where they came back from down 16 points in Atlanta and got that done to get a win. Now it's the home opener for the Saints, second consecutive road game for the Bucks, and we'll talk about all that coming up, as we've got a lot to get to as far as injuries and things like that. I've got thoughts on the Cowboys game. I've got thoughts on the game coming up with New Orleans and some other things around the league. And I'll say this to start the show off. That was a different style of Buccaneer football than we've grown accustomed to in the past couple years. And I'm not going to go so far as to call it dungy ball or anything like that, but it's only one game, I know, and every game is its own thing. It's kind of got different rhythms. Every game is like a fingerprint or a snowflake, like no two are exactly alike. So you kind of go along with whatever the rhythm of that game is. And with that game, the Bucs did exactly what they needed to win in Dallas this past Sunday night. But it kind of had that like dungy feel, like, hey, our defense is this good. Let's just do whatever we got to do and nothing more on offense. We really don't have to do anything silly here. Let's keep it close to the vest. They were a lot less aggressive than I was anticipating. And again, at no point did I complain about it, because the situation of the game, the way it was played, dictated that what they were doing was the right thing. I mean, the defense, I'll throw some numbers at you coming up here in a minute, but man, I mean, that was an absolutely dominating defensive performance. The Cowboys are still trying to score. Like right now, here on Thursday, I think they're still trying to score points, and it's not going to happen, because the Buccaneer defense didn't just give up 3 points, but Dallas never once crossed the 31-yard line of the Bucs the entire game. So they literally never had any red zone opportunities. They made the one field goal from outside the 31-yard line. And that even included, Tom Brady had the interception there near midfield, right? So there was a short field there. But it was a really, really, I mean, like, if you were thinking about this Bucs team coming into the 2022 season and what question marks do you have, this or that, the defensive side answered all of them. I know it's one game. They might look bad this weekend for all we know. It's up and down in the NFL. It always is. But major questions that if you had them, I didn't have major questions, but major or minor questions, I think they got answered. And so, and I think I tweeted it Sunday night. I said, the Bucs are a little run happy this season. It feels like this is different. And they were. I mean, they were running on first down more and things like that. And, they were moving the ball okay. And they certainly had plenty of opportunities, but they didn't do very well on third down. And they ended up having to settle for a lot of field goals. And it's funny because their average gain to, average length to go on third down was like 5 yards. So it wasn't like the offense was setting them up and getting behind the chains in like third and nine, third and 10. It wasn't like that. They had third and shorts most of the time, but I know they missed on a couple of those. The Brady interception was on a third down, I believe, as well, a third and short. So, I mean, some things happened, but they ended up settling for a lot of field goals, even though it didn't seem like they were having offensive trouble. And, hey, like I said, when the other team scores three, scoring 19 is fine. I think I should have written it down. I read on Twitter, I think the Bucs were like 2-20 or something like that the past few years when they failed to score 20 points. But that game and not scoring 20 points, nevertheless, not only was it a comfortable 2, almost 3 score win, but at no point, like at any point, were you worried about the outcome of that game watching it on Sunday night? No. And it wasn't because of the offense. It was because of the defense. And the offense did just enough. But looking at some of the numbers there from the game, I mean, first of all, like I said, on defense, the Cowboys never crossed the 31-yard line. For the Bucs' woes on third down, Dallas's were even worse. Dallas got the first two third down conversions on that opening drive. Dallas was moving the ball, and you're like, oh, man, like they're moving the ball. After going 2 for 2 on that opening drive, they were 1 for 13 on third down the rest of the game, totaling 3 for 15 on third down. And so a lot of punts forced. And if you look at the field position game, and this is a hats off to the special teams, Kamara, first of all, did a good job in his NFL debut. I know he had to hit the punt to get his first official punt three times, because one, there was a penalty, and they re-kicked. And then the second time, it hit the bottom of the scoreboard, which doesn't count. So he had punted twice without actually having an official NFL punt by the time he got the third one, and he booted that 60-something yards into the end zone. But another number, and this is courtesy of Greg Allman, the Bucs beat writer for The Athletic on Twitter. The Bucs either kicked off or punted to the Cowboys nine times on Sunday night. And every single one of those nine times, the Cowboys started at their own 25 or further back. They never started after a special teams play. Remember, there was the interception. That doesn't count. But after a special teams play, whether it be a punt or a kickoff, Dallas never started out of nine times, not once, where they passed their own 25. So the field position made a big difference, too. The defense did a great job. They were swarming, and the game just felt easy, even though the offense struggled a little bit. So it's a very positive sign. I'm not saying the Bucs, like I said, I'm not saying they're going back to the 1999 Bucs where they're going to try and beat everybody, you know, 13-6. But you can see the personality change of the head coach, right? Like the Bruce Arians teams, no risk it, no biscuit, all that stuff down the field. And of course, this any team that's going to be successful in the NFL these days, I don't care who your head coach is, has to be able to do that. But this team now with Todd Bowles is a little more defensive-minded, and the team has a good defense. Now, all of a sudden, they're okay. Well, you know, we're going to keep them at arm's length. I don't even want to say bend but don't break, because the Bucs defense didn't even bend that much Sunday. But that's what it felt like. Bend but don't break probably applies better to the offensive line, because, you know, after Donovan Smith hyperextended his elbow, and we'll get to the injury situation in a moment, but after he did that, they had to bring in Josh Wells at left tackle. Now you had four guys out of the five spots that were not playing on that offensive line last year. Only Wirfs at right tackle was still in there. You had Josh Wells at left tackle, who was getting worked at first by Micah Parsons, and then the Bucs made a little adjustment there with Leonard Fournette, which you probably all saw. And Fournette got himself a slab, as they call it, when he came in and put Parsons on the ground, and that kind of calmed that whole thing down. But, I mean, the first couple plays that Wells was in there, he just got absolutely smoked. And you're like, I don't know if you were, but I was like, oh my God, like they have to, you cannot block 11 with this one guy. They have to make some sort of adjustment. And then from that point on, watching the game, my eyes were glued to Wells every snap until the ball was gone. Like I wasn't even watching anything except Wells until Brady threw the ball, and it got better. Wells ended up ranking out of 66 qualified tackles, 62nd in pass pro efficiency on Sunday night. So obviously he didn't have a great game, but the Bucs, you know, they did what they needed to do. And as a five-man unit, and actually even more than that, because they use, you know, out of the backfield, Fournette, and the guys can stay in and block, as an offensive unit, they figured out a way to get the protection good enough for Brady to do his thing. Now, Brady had he had the quickest seconds to throw from snap to delivery. He averaged 2.19 seconds to throw on Sunday night. Now, I said the quickest and not the worst on purpose, because seconds to throw is not the same as how much time he had to throw. It's just how long he actually took to throw. We know he gets the ball out quick. Doesn't mean that's all he had, but obviously he had to make adjustments too. And like I said on previous shows, if you're going to have issues with your offensive line, the quarterback to have them with is Tom Brady, because he knows how to get the ball out quick. So when I say 2.19 seconds to throw was the quickest of the 32 NFL teams, that doesn't necessarily mean worse. It just means that Brady was getting it out of there. And, you know, I thought they overall got pretty good results. The Bucs offense did move the ball, and they stalled it quite a bit. They could have been better on third down. But remember what I've also talked about before, and analytics has kind of shed more light on this. The best offenses aren't necessarily really good on third down. The best offenses don't have that many third downs. Like, they're getting first downs on first and second down. They're getting big chunks of yardage. So it's not like the best offenses. Like, you watch the Chiefs, it's not like, oh, man, they always find a way to pick up that third and seven. They don't have third and seven. They get 12 yards on second and four. You know, they just chunks. And the Bucs were going to a lot of third downs and not picking them up. But, you know, you could hear it. Or you could see it in the game itself, watching the game. Now, you could hear it in the quotes after the game. Todd Bowles talking about getting the running game going, which I usually abhor, talk about getting the running game going. I think that's one of the most overrated notions. But he was, and Fournette was great. You know, did a good job. Rashad White saw a little bit more action toward the end. But you heard quotes like that. We got the run going. We imposed our will, blah, 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 blah. you could tell there's a difference. Like, Todd Bowles has a philosophical, you know, I want to say shift, but like, he's not the same as Bruce Arians, and he's not going to coach this team the same. And even though he's not coaching the offense directly, he is in charge. And philosophically, what they want to do is a little bit different now. And you might think it's because Brady's older and they're trying to like not make him shoulder as much of the load. And that might be part of it. But I think a big part of it, too, is just the philosophical difference in who our head coach is now compared to Bruce Arians. And so, of course, he has influence on what Byron Leftwich is going to do as the offensive coordinator. And it's fine as long as your defense plays like that. As long as you're not one of those teams that when you need to score, you can't. See, the Bucs, anybody can talk about getting the running game going and blah, blah, blah when your defense holds them to 3 points. Yeah, of course, sure, who cares? But they ain't all going to be like that. There's going to be games where you got to fight fire with fire and get the ball down the field. We know this offense can do it. They have the people to do it. So, you know, they're going to need to be able to make those adjustments and kind of shape shift a little bit their personality according to whatever's going on. But I thought they did a great job of that on Sunday night, and like I said, they knew the situation, and they were always in control, and there was never any issues there as they cruised to a 19-3 win, the fewest points Dallas, second fewest points Dallas has ever been held to in an opener. They got shut out to start the 1989 season. But some other numbers to look at there for the defense, just CeeDee Lamb, for example, one of Dallas's top receivers. He had 11 targets and only two catches, and that is the first time. Well, since 20, okay, there's a crazy stat about this. A receiver having double-digit targets and two catches or less. That only happened one time in the entire 2021 season last year. And coincidentally enough, it was the Bucs, Rob Gronkowski, in that Monday nighter versus the Saints where they lost 9-0. He was targeted 11 times in that game and had two catches. And then before that, it hadn't happened since 2018. It only happened twice in 2018. That was also the Bucs. So basically, a receiver having double-digit targets and just two catches has only happened four times since 2018. Two of them were in 2018, Mike Evans versus the Panthers, Chris Godwin versus the Saints. One of them was 2021, Gronk, like I just mentioned, and then CeeDee Lamb. So all four have involved the Bucs, and three of them have been Bucs receivers. But I thought that was pretty wild how, I mean, if you go on Greg Allman's Twitter feed, I mean, he posted a bunch of other things, too, just wild numbers about the Bucs defense and how dominant they were. And they did it with relatively simple personnel. I mean, if you look at the snap count chart, and especially on defense, like, they did not deviate from the people they wanted to use. In the defensive secondary, okay, you have your big four, your two corners, your two safeties, Jamel Dean, Carlton Davis, Mike Edwards, Antoine Winfield. There were 69 defensive snaps. All four of them played 69 defensive snaps, 100%. What about nickel, you say? Well, there were 57 of the 69 snaps where the Bucs went with five defensive backs. That is 83% of the snaps. So most of the time, they had five DBs. All 57 of those times, it was Logan Ryan who came out as the nickelback. Sean Murphy Bunting did not play a snap on defense. So they've got their guy. I mean, they know what they like, and it worked out great. So, you know, barring injuries, Dean Davis, Winfield Edwards, Logan Ryan comes in as the nickelback. Same thing at linebacker. Lavonte David, Devin White had it pretty much pinned down. They both had great games there at linebacker. On the edges, it was mainly Shaq Barrett and Joe Tryon. A little bit of action there for Golston and Logan Hall and Carl Nassib. They both got a smattering of snaps. But overall, let me count here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah, they used 16 guys on defense. They only subbed in five guys. And in the secondary, they didn't sub in any. They just ran nickel with one guy. When it was nickel, it was Logan Ryan. So kind of surprising if you were wondering about Sean Murphy Bunting and where was he. Didn't see him. He didn't play a defensive snap. On offense, it was kind of the same thing as well. The tight ends didn't do much. They tried some different sets. They don't have a fullback officially, but they did use Kokeith in the backfield a little bit. They used Rashad White along with Fournette a couple of times and things like that. But for the most part, they pretty much stuck to a pretty standard personnel grouping. And there were some good things on offense. I told you I thought Julio Jones, especially if Chris Godwin didn't play, it ended up he did play, and he was productive until he went out of the game again. But Julio Jones still chowed a little bit, as I said he would. Three catches for 69 yards. The biggest gain of the night was that 48-yarder, which was a great play. And if you're wondering about, like, physically where Julio Jones is, he reached 20.62 miles per hour on that 48-yarder, which is one of the fastest of anybody in the league in week one. As far as they got the next-gen stats, like the trackers in their shoulder pads, so they can get the exact speed these guys are moving and everything else. And then on one of the jet sweeps, he got up to almost 20 miles an hour as well. So there are no issues with him athletically. Injury-wise, of course, is a different story. You hope for the best. But so far, that's looking like a very good pickup. He had a couple of those jet sweeps for 17 yards to go with the three catches. So all told, he touched the ball five times, and he got 86 yards. And as far as injuries go, so today I'm doing the show on Thursday afternoon. And like I said, by now they've practiced. So the Thursday practice, if you're listening to this on Friday, they have practiced again. We'll see. They'll have more information. But as of my talking to you right now, Mike Evans with his calf, Julio Jones, Donovan Smith with his elbow, didn't practice on Thursday. Fournette, who had a hammy thing, did. Russell Gage did. They should be fine. And of course, Godwin has not been listed as out officially, but on Friday is when they give the actual game day injury report, where they list him questionable, probable, out, whatever. And I suspect Godwin will be out then. But just because Evans, Jones, and Smith did not practice on Thursday doesn't mean they won't play. Obviously, especially with Smith. Nothing against Josh Wells, but you'd really like to see him back in there. I think Evans and Julio Jones will both play and be fine. Of course, the Bucs can always use Scotty Miller if they need to as a sixth receiver, or they could just go with five, and that'll probably come down more to special teams decisions than anything else. But you got to give it to the Bucs, man. I mean, that was a dominant effort, and it came in front of 25-plus million viewers. That's the largest for a Sunday night football opener since 2015. It was the largest TV audience for any game in week one. And it was, not the fireworks maybe you were anticipating, but it was plenty enough. And so, especially when you watch the other games in the division, you know, the Panthers losing to the Browns, the Saints and Falcons taking turns trying to hump a doorknob, basically. I was very unimpressed. I know this always happens. I mean, you can't go off of week one, especially in the NFL. I mean, we don't know anything about the teams just because we saw a game, and we can't draw any conclusions. But that didn't stop me on Sunday from watching the Saints game against the Falcons and declaring the Saints to be weak multiple times, both on Twitter and out loud, anybody who was listening here at my house. I'm like, these guys are supposed to be, and this is, see, part of this is I had the Saints in my survivor pool. So when they're losing by two touchdowns, I start getting angry. I start lashing out. So I start tweeting and saying all these horrible things about the Saints. Not that I need a survivor pool as an excuse not to like the Saints, but I dislike them even more because I'm already like thinking I'm going to get eliminated in week one of this thing. These guys are a bunch of jabronis. Watching their offensive line just get smoked. They couldn't protect Jameis. It was a debacle. And then they turned it on the second half. Of course they did, because Falcons, right? But, I mean, they turned it on the second half. They come back and get the win. There was a lot of people on Twitter saying, oh, God, the Falcons, I can't. You know, they're upset about the division race. They let the Saints in that game, and they let them win. That was a huge missed opportunity for the Bucs. Listen to me right now. I saw that game Sunday because it was on. It was the one we got here in Tampa on Fox, if you were watching football in the 1 to 4 p.m. slot. And so I was watching it. If we are contending, if we're like in a dogfight for the division with those guys, it's not because of any other reason than the Bucs aren't as good as we thought they were. So if the Bucs are as good as we think they are or hope they are, they will win this division comfortably. And I'm not saying that as like some big proclamation, like tough talk, you know, trying to make a bold statement. I mean, the Bucs should be, they are the best team in this division. So if we're having trouble with the Saints, if we get down to week 13 and it's a one game or something like that, then by then it's probably because something went wrong here, not because anything they're doing up there. Because they did not inspire confidence watching that football game. And especially up front, and Jameis ain't exactly Tom Brady, as we know. Although to his credit, I mean, Jameis, he brought him back, and it was classic Jameis. He made a couple of amazing throws. Even after there were some, you know, early bumps in the road, I mean, that's what he does. He'll make a play that makes you pull your hair out, and then he'll make a breathtaking throw. But they found a way to get the two-point conversions to everything they needed to do and end up winning that game late. Hey, fine. Good for them. Whatever. You should not be worried about the Saints. The Bucs should beat the Saints this Sunday. Now, we know, obviously, let's talk about that game for a moment. We know the history, okay? The Bucs have lost four straight in the regular season to the Saints. Of course, they won the divisional round playoff game back in 2020. Tom Brady has been here since 2020, so this is at the beginning of his third season. He's played both regular season and playoffs. He's played 40 games as the Bucs quarterback right now, okay? Do you know The record is, by the way, 30-10, okay, in 40 games. 30-10, and that's counting regular season and playoffs since Tom Brady started being the quarterback of the Bucs. The Bucs are 1-7 against the Saints and Rams, 1-4 against the Saints, and then they're 29-3 against everybody else. They've only lost three games in 3 years to teams not named the Saints or the Rams. And if you remember those, it was that Thursday nighter against the Bears where Brady called the fourth timeout, or thought they, or no, not the timeout, thought it was fourth down when it had already been fourth down. There was that. They lost that one. There was the Chiefs' first time around, the regular season Chiefs game. And then that game last season against Washington where they just, they lost to Washington, but they lost to Washington. Those are the only three times they've lost to anybody besides the Saints or the Rams, but they've been swept by the Saints the last two seasons. And of course, lost to the Rams in both the past two regular seasons and then in the playoffs last season as well. So, you know what? I think now's as good a time as any to go ahead and just put this behind us. This whole thing with the Saints, it's been talked about and, you know, done to death, and the Bucs have won a Super Bowl, and it's still a team. And actually, both the seasons the Bucs have won Super Bowls, if you go back to 2002 as well, they're 0-4 against the Saints. They got swept by the Saints that year too. I'm tired of hearing about it. And this is a game the Bucs, if you didn't look at it through the prism of the history or what's gone wrong in the other games and stuff, you would feel like the Bucs are in a pretty good spot. They are 2.5-point favorites. All right. Now, obviously, this is going to be a different matchup for the Bucs offense than going against Dallas was. And Brady has gained just 5.4 yards per play against New Orleans since joining the Bucs. Mike Evans averages less than 50 yards per game since Marshawn Lattimore came into the league in 2017. We know about the injuries. The Saints had the league's top rush defense last year, at least according to some metrics they did. So, you know, we'll see. Maybe the running game isn't able to take as much heat off Brady as it did on Sunday night. And a lot of it just has to do with what the score is and who out gets out to an early lead and things like that. But I'm confident the Bucs have the ability to play an aggressive downfield style when they need to. And they didn't really need to on Sunday night. But it should be a fun one against the Saints. It always is. I don't care what the records are the past couple of years. You look forward, especially, in fact, because of the record the past 2 years, you look forward to a game like this. And one more little note, and this is more of a gambling note. Again, the Bucs are a 2.5-point favorite, but I read this the other day on Twitter. Since 2019, teams playing consecutive road games in week two, in other words, first two games of the season on the road in week two, those teams are 8-0 against the spread. That applies to the Bucs at the Saints this weekend, as well as the Patriots at the Steelers and the Colts at Jacksonville. So it's not going to go undefeated forever, but for whatever reason, this is why I always look for trends, historical trends of teams in certain situations. For whatever reason, week two, second straight road game, those teams are very, very good against the spread. And since the Bucs were favored, obviously, if they cover the spread, they would have to win. And we hope that is definitely the case. As far as Thursday Night Football, again, if you're listening to this, Thursday Night Football probably already happened, but I'm recording beforehand. And I was able to cash pretty nicely with the Bills in week one. I liked them going over to the Rams and getting the win they did. Tonight's tougher. I think the Chargers are getting anywhere in the neighborhood of 3.5 to 4, depending on what you're looking at. And it's always, the Chiefs, you know, you wonder about them in the offseason. They lost Tyreek Hill. How's it going to look? And it looked like no problem at all when they took on the Cardinals this past weekend. And the Chargers also got a win, although they were out to an early lead and then struggled a little bit down the stretch, but held on to beat the Raiders. But I always like taking the points in these games with good teams. I know the Chargers have gone in there in primetime. I think it was also a Thursday night. Was it last year or the year before? I don't remember. There might have been without fans in 2020, but I remember the Chargers going in on a Thursday night and getting a big win at Arrowhead, and that was later in the season. So I'm going to go ahead and take, ideally, four for this one, but by the time you hear this, you'll know if I was wrong or right. It's on Amazon Prime, all right? First one on Amazon Prime, first real one. They did a preseason game. So I know I did my show ranting about streaming a few weeks ago, and we're going to put it into practice tonight. Like I said, I do have Amazon Prime, not because I'm a streaming person, I'm a cable guy, but I have Amazon Prime anyway, so I get Prime on the TV. And the Rays actually played a day game today, because the thing I don't want is having to switch back and forth between two games that are not on the same system. So instead of using the last channel button on my remote, I got to go out of the Amazon app, I got to go back into the cable, I got to hit the source button, all the bullshit, you know, with the streaming. Excuse my language. But there's really nothing else on tonight, I don't think. I'm just going to be watching football, so I don't know what I'll do during commercial breaks. Maybe I'll just scroll Twitter, which you can follow me on at Bobby Game Day, BobbyGameDay, at Bobby Game Day, and also on the email, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com, if you want to get a hold of me. If you want a fridge schedule, I posted a picture of mine after the game ended last week with the win over the Cowboys. Go look at it. Email me. If you email me, like I said, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. And I'll send you the file. You can print it out if you want that. I want to thank our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. If you're in the market for a vehicle, whether it's a car, truck, or van, whether it's brand new, whether it's pre-owned, whatever it is, Bill Curry Ford is going to have not just whatever one thing, multiple options for whatever you're looking for. So the first thing you do is go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. It's spelled C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Check out the completely transparent, no-haggle online pricing there. The full inventory, get it narrowed down to a few things so you have something in mind when you head down there, then go to the lot. They're a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. They've been serving the area there for 60 years, and you can go see the beautiful showroom. Like I said, the lot is sprawling. The service center right next door. Whatever you end up doing, whether it's new, whether it's pre-owned, whether it's a car, truck, or van, you get the nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty, so you never have to worry about engine trouble. It's covered. You don't have to pay for repairs. Like, you literally don't have to pay for repairs. And the first year, you get free oil changes and all that service, too. And you get 10 years roadside assistance, so you don't need AAA. All these things come with any vehicle you're going to buy from Bill Curry Ford. So check them out a mile north of the stadium, on the east side of the road there, just north of Hillsboro on Dale Mabry, or go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. Thanks to them for always looking after the show. Of course, thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform, the single best place anywhere, TV, internet, whatever it is. You don't need to go anywhere else. It's all covered at JoeBucksFan.com, and to be able to be on this site and get in front of all of you is a privilege. I appreciate it. And, of course, thanks to all of you as well. It's going to be a great weekend. We got a Sunday at 1 o'clock game. We got college football, the full slate. Looking forward to college game day at 9 a.m. on Saturday in Boone, North Carolina, where I've been many times. A beautiful place. It's going to be a fun show and a great day of college football then. And then Sunday, of course, you've got all the games. Whatever it is, be safe. Have fun. Hang out by the pool. Hang out on the couch, watch football, whatever it is. We're finally in the middle of it now, you know, and it feels great. So I'll talk to y'all next week, hopefully about a 2-0 football team. But in the meantime, until then, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.